Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're continuing with our series on the Bhagavan Man and his dialogue with Prahlad Maharaj. 7th Canto, Chapter 13. Today we'll do text 26. Tatrapidam patinam cha sukaya yanupattaye karmani kurvatam drishta nivrittosmi viparyayam. It's the Python Man speaking. In this human form of life, a man and woman unite for the sensual pleasure of sex. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. Purport. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, Yanmaitunari griha meji sukham itucham. Man and woman both seek sexual enjoyment, and when they are united by the ritualistic ceremony of marriage, they are happy for some time. But finally there is dissension, and thus there are so many cases of separation and divorce. Although every man and woman is actually eager to enjoy life through sexual unity, the result is disunity and distress. Marriage is recommended to give men and women a concession for restricted sex life, which is also recommended in Bhagavad Gita by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi. Sex life not against the principles of religion is Krishna. Every living entity is always eager to enjoy sex life because materialistic life consists of eating, sleeping, sex, and fear. In animal life, eating, sleeping, sexual enjoyment, and fear cannot be regulated. But for human society, the plan is that although men, like animals, must be allowed to eat, sleep, enjoy sex, and take protection from fear, they must be regulated. The Vedic plan for eating recommends that one take yajna shishta, or prasad, food offered to Krishna. Yajna shishtasina santo muchante sarvakyo vishai. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food that is offered first for sacrifice. In material life, one commits sinful activities, especially in eating. And because of sinful activities, one is condemned by nature's laws to accept another body, which is imposed as punishment. Sex and eating are essential, and therefore they are offered to human society under Vedic restrictions, so that according to the Vedic injunctions, people may eat, sleep, enjoy sex, be protected from fearful life, and gradually be elevated and liberated from the punishment of material existence. Thus, the Vedic injunctions for marriage offer a concession to human society. The idea being that a man and woman united in ritualistic marriage ceremony should help one another advance in spiritual life. Unfortunately, especially in this age, men and women unite for unrestricted sexual enjoyment. Thus, they are victimized, being obliged to take rebirth in the forms of animals to fulfill their animalistic propensities. The Vedic injunctions therefore warn, Nayam deho deha bhajam nirloke kastan kaman arhate vidbhujam ye. One should not enjoy sex life like hogs and eat everything, even to the limit of stool. A human being should eat prasad offered to the deity and should enjoy sex life according to the Vedic injunctions. He should engage himself in the business of Krishna consciousness. He should save himself from the fearful condition of material existence, and he should sleep only to recover from fatigue due to working hard. The learned Brahmana said that since everything is misused by fruitive workers, he had retired from all fruitive activities. Translation again, repeat after me. In this human form of life, a man and woman unite for the sensual pleasure of sex. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. Om Yena Chimanandasya Yananjana Shalakya Chakshan Vatikani Tasmai Shri Prabhupada Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shri Advaita Gadaha Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Python Man is explaining to Prahlad Maharaj his observations, his study of life, and therefore his conclusion. What is that conclusion? Nivrittosmi Vaparyam. I have now ceased from karmic activities. I have now put an end to all activities for gratifying the body and mind. Why is that? Nivrittosmi Vaparyam. Vaparyam, the opposite. I see that everyone just gets contrary results to their expectations. Now, this is the riddle of material existence. If you can master this riddle, you'll save yourself so much trouble. What is that riddle? Things are not what they appear to be. What you expect is different from what you get. That is the mystery of Maya. So you have to analyze your life and see that there are these expectations, this eagerness, and then there are the results. They don't match. But few people wise up and see that. People think, because I have expectations, I have desires, I have longings, therefore there'll be a certain result. Seems natural, right? Expectations, desires, longing, and then the result. And fulfillment. Presto. What could be more natural? That's the propaganda that's going on today, even under the name of being spiritual. Of course, this is actually animal life. A human being should be able to see the dichotomy, the split between expectation or desire and the result. Animals can't do that. Just like yesterday, I was standing near the door outside here, and the ducks that Shukadev has trained up, as soon as they see someone, you know, come out of this house, they immediately think, food, food, food. Mm-hmm. So they're all the ducks, without any fear, they're just quacking around me, quacking it up. They've got it all figured out according to their tiny duck brain. A person from this house means food. There's no need to fear. They were not fearful in the slightest. They were just crowding around, you know, quacking like I had a, you know, cosmic obligation to feed them. And then when I called to Shukadev and told them, will you get your friends out of here, please? Then he came running out. And he knew what to do. He was eating some snacks. So he took one little snack and he threw it on the ground, and the ducks all went for that. And then as they went for that, he started shooing them away. Okay, now get out of here. Get out of here. Go, go, go. So now, how are human activities different from the ducks' activities? The ducks are thinking, we want to eat. And at this house, there's nothing to fear. They don't try to kill us. They give us things to eat. So we're going to hang around the house and quack. It makes sense, right? You do the same thing if you were a duck. Maybe you did in the past when you were a duck. Now, how are human beings different? They're not acting different these days. The human beings think, we have a desire. We have expectation. Therefore, there will be fulfillment. It looks like that on TV, doesn't it? In the movies, right? Television, desire, fulfillment, presto, right? That's why it's so contaminating to watch mundane movies, television. It's not that we're just fanatics saying, oh, it's Maya. Try to understand why. You get brainwashed thinking that expectation automatically produces fulfillment. That is the disease you pick up. It starts to corrode your consciousness, and then you wonder, what happened to my spiritual life? The message is beamed deep into your subconsciousness. Desire, desire, expectation, and fulfillment. Look, these people on the screen are getting it. You'll get it too. It just seems so natural, just like duck existence. So, a human being is meant to see the dichotomy, the split between expectation or desire and fulfillment. Just like the Python Man has done. He's observed. What goes on here? People want one thing, they get another thing. Thus, seeing the contrary results, I have ceased from all this madness. It's just too much. Now, what particularly has he been observing in this case? The eagerness for the man and woman to seek sexual enjoyment. Srila Prabhupada explains quite frankly in the purport, these things are happening because people have material bodies. Material body means the propensity for eating, sleeping, mating, and defense. So it's there in the body. There's no need to wonder where it comes from. Now, this eagerness is what causes so many problems. First of all, you have that natural propensity in your body for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But on top of that, there's a psychological eagerness instilled in you by contact with material nature for solving your problems through sense gratification. This is what makes it really wild. Bad enough you have the basic propensity of your body. But then, in your contaminated consciousness, you have this hope that through sense gratification, I will be complete. I will add to myself the missing things. The bumps in my road will be smoothed out. The holes in my heart will be filled. And then when you magnify this individual aspiration onto a global scale, you have the delusion of world peace through sense gratification, which is what's going on now. Okay. So first, try to grasp this eagerness. Yes, yes, yes. This will solve my problems. Yes, this will make me feel complete. Yes, this is something to do. Yes, I'll be absorbed. Yes, yes. We'll have our own little world. We'll build a world of our own based on Rajagun. And of course, for that world of your own, based on Rajagun, you have to work very hard to support it. But that's all right. As long as we get that absorbing Rajagun activity, we don't mind struggling. We don't mind slaving. Just to have our private cave to crawl back into at the end of the day. That's basically what it comes down to. Just to have that private cave to crawl into and sleep. Sleep and mate, and then get up and crawl out of your cave in the morning and back to your enslavement. You think it's very simple when you know, it's not very complicated. But what makes things so unwieldy, even though you should be able to see it so clearly, that is the power of lust. As Arjuna questioned Krishna in Bhagavad Gita at the end of the third chapter, what's going on? Why does the living entity engage in these unsatisfactory activities, because they produce unsatisfactory results? Why, even against the living entity's own will, apparently? What's going on here? Is it the super soul in the heart impelling you to engage in sinful activity? No, the super soul in the heart doesn't do that. Is it the devil making you do it? What's going on? You want to look for the devil? its material nature. Simply by your contact with material nature, you're impelled to do these destructive activities. You have to know the cause. Karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. Simply by contact with material nature, you're infected. And then you act in a certain way. Lord Sri Krishna answered, Kamesha krodha esha rajagun samudbhava. Arjuna, the reason is lust born of contact with the mode of passion. And when that lust becomes unfulfilled, which it must be, then there's wrath, anger. And in this way, you're solidly bound in material life. The resulting illusion is so powerful, that resulting illusion from lust and anger, that you're bound tightly. Now, as you know, and you should study those purports, these verses at the end of the third chapter, if you want the most brilliant, genius, ingenious insight into material nature, what's going on, you study those purports Srila Prabhupada gives in the lust verses at the end of the third chapter of the Gita. It's nothing like any conventional mundane morality. Far from it. It's the most scientific, analytical, penetrating presentation of what causes bondage in material life. So I recommend, whenever delusion strikes you, you bring out that section of the Gita, and it'll take you a lifetime to get to the depths of it. The concepts are so amazing about how love of God perverts into lust, how your propensity to serve Krishna becomes transformed into lust. And then you can see, I can swing things the other way. The love of Krishna that originated in me, the serving propensity for Krishna that I had, became perverted into lust. Now, let's push things back. Go from lust into the serving propensity and love of Krishna. That is the life of a devotee. We acknowledge the realities of the shackles because of material nature and the material body. Karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. This is the way of life in material existence. So first you recognize you have a contamination, and then you make a plan to deal with it. So Krishna gives the hints in Bhagavad Gita. Where's the lust hiding? It's hiding in the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. And then Krishna urges that through proper lifestyle, you conquer this enemy, which is the reason why self-realization, enlightenment, Krishna consciousness is stopped, just because of this enemy. So Krishna urges, from the very beginning, make a plan to slay this dangerous enemy. And what is the nature of that dangerous enemy? Contrary to how it appears, it is dusprena analena cha. Burns like fire and never satisfied. It's the ultimate ripoff. It looks so attractive. It's going to be so juicy, so sumptuous. If that's the case, why aren't the materialists looking so ecstatic? Have you ever wondered that when you're on Sankirtan? They're getting it all the time. You know, it's raining out of the sky, it's bubbling up from the ground. Lust everywhere. Why do they look so depleted, so gray-faced, so shriveled, so dull? Observing the situation, you should understand people are getting the opposite results to what they expect. Why aren't they happy in their relationships? Why is family life becoming practically extinct? Why can't people stay with each other, even in a mundane relationship? Why sometimes even our own devotees can't stay with each other? It's all because this idea is there that man and woman mainly are together to try to experience sexual pleasure. And if there's some deficiency in that department, which there must be, except on television and in the movies, then it has to be a split. You've got to deprogram yourself about this. Because in your consciousness, has been inserted all these fantasies since a young age. And so you have this, try to recognize, in your heart is built up this craziness that there is such a thing as happiness in that Rajagun way. Now, in one purport in that section of the Gita, Srila Prabhupada gives extraordinary insight. He says, there may be an appearance or a semblance of happiness in that activity, but that semblance or appearance of happiness is actually your worst enemy. I can imagine it would take some realization, some spiritual insight for you to grasp the full import of that. The male-female connection activity seems to produce a semblance of happiness. It's superficial happiness. And that is what is your worst enemy, because you become bound by that appearance of happiness. I think I was happy. I mean, I think that was nice. Wow. Yeah. I think I feel a bit of relief. It's a ripoff. It's an illusion, because sooner or later, the real effects manifest. What else is there to life? You start getting frustrated. The man and woman start to fight with each other. The activity doesn't give you that wholesome sense of fulfillment that you thought it would. And therefore you take it out on the other person. You start looking in other directions. Oh, I've got to find something else to do. The activity is actually quite boring. Day after day, night after night. Whether it's this place or that place, in your home, on a boat. Even movie stars boast about doing these things in an airplane. All the same. And finally you get angry. This is how the karma turns to Krodha. And in this way, you're firmly bound in material nature. So please learn how to suspect that appearance of so-called happiness. It's very temporary. It's like your head spins for a while. Ooh, that wasn't so bad after all. Yeah, I feel kind of good. There's kind of relief. I feel kind of peaceful. Whew, finally, I got that off my chest. That lasts only a short time. And then the reality dawns. Ugh, so many problems. And you become dull. You notice yourself becoming dull. So you have two choices when you notice yourself becoming dull because of this immersion in lower passion. You either ignore it, anyway, or you become angry at yourself because of it. What have I done to myself? Oh, gosh. I sacrificed my spiritual principles, and I'm not even satisfied. I'm miserable because of it. And you, in your heart, you can't really be happy with the other person because, you know, I've sacrificed my sense control and my purity, and I'm not even happy. Anyway, you just got to stick to it and fight your way through it. Or else you choose the approach of complete illusion. Well, anyway, you know, that's just part of life, you know. I mean, not everyone can be pure, so, you know, you just got to do the best you can, you know. At least try to make it to the Sunday feast on Sunday. So, this is a tragedy. All because we haven't been trained, or we refuse to accept the training, how to see as the Python Man is trying to teach you. He admits there is that eagerness. Man and woman have that eagerness. As they say so bluntly these days, let's get it on. That eagerness is there. We don't hide from that in Krishna consciousness. We're not in la-la land. We deal with the reality. That eagerness, that hankering is there. But what is the result? The result is different from the expectation. If you can get to the bottom of this riddle, you'll save yourself so much problem. If you can see through this paradox, It's very powerful. It's the most powerful thing. Krishna himself admits in Bhagavad Gita. Daivyesha gunamai mamamayadhyaya. This riddle is so powerful, you can't beat it unless you surrender to me. Now you're going to believe Krishna? he says himself, you can't get through this riddle of powerful expectation not matched by the result. This kind of knowledge takes a lifetime to meditate on. You have to think about this all the time. And then you'll start to see what goes on in material nature. I remember 1977, Srila Prabhupada was giving his umpteenth example about how you're not the body. And then suddenly he just stopped and said, do you know why I can always come up with endless examples about how we're not the body? He said, because I'm always thinking about these things. Very interesting. Always deliberating these points. So if you really want to be sharp and intelligent, you think about these things. You look at yourself. Why do I have that eagerness built into me for the so-called ultimate solution? When it's not matched by the results. And even though I know that, even though I see it in people's faces in their lives, still something impels me. That's why Shukadeva Goswami says in Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavatam, second canto rather, Pashyan api na pashyati. Although you should be sufficiently experienced, still you don't see. So this sex desire makes a fool of us. Now, the first step in dealing with it is to understand it's a contamination. Many people don't like to hear that. It's not proper New Age consciousness. The desire for sense gratification, the lust, is a material contamination. It shouldn't be there. It's love of God gone bad, perverted. So first you have to recognize, this is perverted. This is weird. This is actually bizarre. Pure spirit soul thinking can be happy through physiological combination. This is nuts. You've got to think about that. Then, as you think in that way, and as you watch yourself becoming affected by the modes of nature, you can feel your skin burn, visions start to dance in your head. What the hell is this? This doesn't make any sense. You can even, in your mind, map out the thing to its conclusion. Okay. Suppose I do that. There'll be this, and then there'll be that, and there'll be that. Now what's the conclusion? That's proper thinking. How to see something through to the end. This kind of skill is not taught in material life. Because it's not the job of Maya to educate you about herself. Maya's department is covering you over, not educating you. So, you can't find this kind of education in material life. I was reading somewhere how someone wanted to make a computer program that would simulate the effects of what overeating does to your body and what lack of exercise does to your body, thinking that if people would hook up to this software and then they would see on the computer screen that, you know, the effects of their lifestyle. The software would ask them questions. How much do you exercise, or when do you eat, and what do you eat? And then the software would generate on the computer screen what your body will look like in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. So the innovator who designed this software thought it was a great idea to save the whole world. Now people will actually be able to see graphically what are the effects of their lifestyle. But then he tried to sell this idea to investors, and they told him, no, people don't want to see that. They don't want to know that. They don't want to see the long-range results of their activities. They don't want it. This is what you're dealing with in preaching and on Sankirtan. People don't want to see the long-term effects of their activities. They want to enjoy the temporary so-called rapture, that semblance of happiness from interaction with the sense objects. Because it's so temporary, people just want to focus in a very narrow way. They don't want to think too far, because if you think too far, you lose that appearance of happiness. But devotees are trained to think far, and therefore devotees should not be victimized by that temporary appearance of so-called happiness. So this is the difference. By surrendering to a life of sense gratification, you lose your ability to see your life in terms of a long-term perspective. You can't see the long or even medium range effects of your activities. This is part of the sacrifice you make when you sign on the dotted line. Yes, let's do it. When you sign, you're also accepting all the things that come along with the contract. Loss of long-term vision, inability to understand the long-range benefit that you should be aspiring for in life, and you just become attached to the moment. Because that semblance of happiness produced in lust is only for a moment. Therefore, because you're attached to the lust, you become attached to the moment. And this is where all that so-called philosophy comes from. Just live here now. Just take every moment as it comes. It's a sex-like philosophy. So, now, how does one practically deal with this lust problem? Because, as the purport frankly admits, because you have a material body, you have these things. Now, we read that marriage is recommended to give men and women a concession for restricted sex life, which is also recommended in Bhagavad Gita by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharma Garuda Bhuteshu Kamosmi. Sex life not against the principles of religion is Krishna. So in this way you can see that Krishna consciousness includes everything. Eating, sleeping, even mating. In such a way that the activity brings about the presence of Krishna. But nowhere do we find allowance for unrestricted interaction between male and female. You may say, well, what's the problem with that, you know? At least, you know, it goes on between husband and wife rather than, you know, freely. True, that is not as bad as random interactions with the general population. Still, the Vedic knowledge restricts the interactions, even within marriage, to protect the husband and wife from going into animal life in their next birth. That is the point. It's not just some kind of fanaticism, something that's, you know, meant for the days of the Manusamhita, but not now. The purpose is to protect the husband and wife from going into animal life. That's where unrestricted sex life, even in marriage, takes you. Why? Because the desires are never fulfilled, and therefore, in your next life, you have to get a chance to try and fulfill those desires again. This brain on Elena chop. The lust burns like fire and is never satisfied. Therefore, you carry over your false expectations into your next birth. This is something to take great note of. As Prabhupada writes, unfortunately, especially in this age, men and women unite for unrestricted sexual enjoyment. Thus they are victimized, being obliged to take rebirth in the forms of animals to fulfill their animalistic propensities. Now you may say, but if we're devotees, then how is it so that we'll, you know, take animal bodies? We're devotees. We're just in one department, you know. We're a bit indulgent, but everything else is okay. That is true, but you'll miss the opportunity to go back to Godhead. You have to take birth again and practice Krishna consciousness and try to get to a higher level. Some people say that's quite all right. Others say, oh, not again, another material birth. Oh, no. becoming a little baby again, becoming a teenager again? Oh, no. Getting old and dying again? No, not again. Others will say, well, it's okay, you know, at least I'll probably be a devotee and, you know, and it'll be okay. And don't underestimate the power that you have now to make a solution now. That is the nature of an intelligent devotee. Let's deal with this now. I'm tired of putting it off. Let's battle with this monster now. We'll battle in the appropriate way. That is the purpose of all the ashrams, whether it's brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas. All the ashrams are actually conceptualized in terms of dealing with the lust desire. Brahmachari life means none. Grihastha life means restricted. Vanaprastha means none. Sannyas means none. You get the point? I know it's not new agey. What can we do? New ageiness brings about simply old age, disease, death, and rebirth. You're not supposed to be interested in that. So, we should not feel that our options are totally restricted. Oh, I'm trying to be Krishna conscious. That means no sex. That's not what the purport says. Krishna allows it. From the material point of view, it is a necessity from the material point of view. But there's a way to deal with it so that you'll become Krishna conscious in the process. Therefore, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Vrudo Bhuteshu Kamasmi. I am that sex life when it's done according to Dharma. So what more do you want out of Krishna? I've heard Srila Prabhupada say that you can even see Krishna in this way through that activity done according to Dharma. I myself don't have that experience. I prefer other ways of seeing Krishna. But anyway, that's what the Shastra says. If you feel compelled to take up that kind of lifestyle, then if you follow the regular principles, Krishna says, I am that. We don't contest that point. We don't shirk from it. The whole point is to become purified, as stated here. Thus, the Vedic injunctions for marriage offer a concession to human society. The idea being that a man and woman united in a ritualistic marriage ceremony should help one another advance in spiritual life. Then the real love starts to be there. We can breathe a sigh of relief now. Then the real love can be discussed. When the man and woman are united for the purpose of helping one another to advance in spiritual life. Otherwise, all this love talk, as you know, just throw it out the door. I think last time I told you about the exercise we're having at our seminar at the loft, getting the people to say, instead of I love you to their partner, saying I desire you. And then the partner can respond, I desire you too. And that way, the reality becomes more apparent. We're not against love in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people have that view. Sometimes even our own devotees think that, oh, I want love, but you're not allowed to have love in bhakti. I want someone to care for me. I want to care for someone. I'm tired of being alone in the ashram. Where is my Yudhisthira? Where is my Draupadi? All right. If you help each other in Krishna consciousness, call it love, please. Otherwise, don't. We're very eager for devotees to have love. But it doesn't mean you can only love the opposite sex. Brahmacharis can love each other. Does that sound weird? Brahmacharis can love each other. Sannyasis can love each other. Why is it that love is only between, well, yeah, I don't know if you can even say that these days, between male and female? You've got to be liberal, you know? Why can't you love all living entities? So the big mistake that Maya imprints on our consciousness is, hey, Brahmacharya, you can only love a woman. Hey, Brahmacharya, you can only love a man. No. We can love all living entities because they're parts of Krishna. And when we help all living entities to become Krishna conscious, we are loving. Just like when Shukadev goes outside and feeds the ducks prasad, he's loving them. So this is the glory of bhakti. We learn how to love all living entities. When the brahmacharis live together for service to Krishna, helping one another, inspiring one another, that is love. When the brahmacharinis are living together, working hard to serve Krishna, that's love. Similarly, when the householders, man and woman, live together for helping one another in spiritual life, yes, that is love. Anything else? Repetition of birth and death. So I hope everyone's clear about these things. There is love in Krishna consciousness. In fact, in bhakti, there is nothing but love. What do you think bhakti means? Loving devotion for Krishna. When Krishna's in the center, you can treat everybody else properly. Then there can be real love when Krishna's in the center. Now, what is the Python man saying? He's saying, I know there's this Vedic concession for proper regulation of human activities, but I've rejected all kinds of activities because I see the people aren't following. And they're not getting the proper result because they're not following. Therefore, I'm just laying here on the ground doing nothing, apparently. Actually, he's engaged in Krishna's service in his own way. But he's not engaged in materialistic activities. He said, sorry, I stopped it because I see that the result people get is contrary to their expectations. As Prabhupada concludes the purport, he says, the learned Brahmana said that since everything is misused by fruitive workers, he had retired from all fruitive activities. In other words, the fruitive workers misuse the Vedic system. They don't take up regulation. They don't purify themselves. Therefore, the Python man said, since it's all misused, I retire from it all. Now, it doesn't have to be misuse. If we can penetrate to this riddle of expectation doesn't match the outcome. Have more air in here, please. Another window. If you can drill this into your head, and what's wrong if it takes a lifetime for you to understand this point? You'll save yourself so much trouble. What's wrong with day after day you have to talk to yourself about these things? I know one devotee in Wellington, when he wakes up in the morning, he has his stereo system fixed so that a timer comes on and it plays a reading of that section of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. As soon as he wakes up, Kamesha, Krodesha, Rajagosha. He might say, oh, that's fanatical. No, he's trying to deal with his situation. He wants to understand. There's so much in those purports that he's hearing about love of God, about Krishna consciousness, about how Krishna consciousness goes down and how to reverse the process. So he wants that in his consciousness when he wakes up, so that he starts his day with the right outlook. Once he helps himself, he'll be able to help others. This is the major problem. The lusty expectations producing results that you didn't want. So first admit, there's this eagerness in the body. Yes, male-female combination. Yes, yes. coming together, uniting, creating an explosion of delight. Better think twice about it. Take a deeper look at that so-called explosion. What are the consequences? Ignorance, dullness, you lose your spiritual taste, and what to speak of countless material problems. What to speak of the injustice that the man and woman do to each other by their expectation that they're going to be happy in this way. If you can understand these things, you'll save yourself so much trouble. There are various ways to deal with the problem. The different ashrams have their different styles for dealing with the problem. In Grihastha life, you're allowed a concession. You act according to the regular principles, you become purified. For those of you who are Grihasthas or thinking to become Grihasthas, if you ever talk to a Grihastha, serious Grihastha, who's taken the regular principles seriously, you'll be shocked at their realizations. They actually become so powerful in their spiritual understanding. Then you'll understand why this system is there. When you see the fruits of that system, if you take the trouble to find the proper examples, you'll see the fruits of the system. Such power, such clarity, even from within the householder ashram. It's amazing. And then you can see those who, by their own choice, decided not to follow the proper system. And you see their consciousness. So, these things should be understood. Now, as you become more advanced in Krishna consciousness, you should become aware of the ultimate solution to the lust problem, which is offered by Shukadeva Goswami in the Bhagavatam. But it is for advanced devotees. In the section of the Bhagavatam 10th canto describing the Rasa Leela, there Shukadeva Goswami says that if you are Shradanvita, if you are a faithful sadhaka, a devotee who's faithful to the instructions of the guru, faithful to the process of bhakti yoga, and if you are anushrinuya, if you are following in the footsteps of the Sipa succession and hearing through the Sipa succession, then when you hear about Krishna's Rasa Leela, your heart will become cleansed of all lust. Just by hearing about Krishna's affairs with the gopis, your heart becomes cleansed of the material contamination. Because remember, as explained in the Gita, lust is actually love of Krishna gone bad. Sour milk. So there's a whole process for reversing how to go from sour milk back to fresh milk. I think it's not possible in the ordinary sense, right? You can't make... All right. But in Krishna consciousness, it's possible to turn the sour milk into fresh milk. So, how do you know you're able to take that cure that Shukadeva Goswami offers? You can feel, when you're sufficiently advanced, that the cleansing will be there. If you feel, on the other hand, that when you read about these things in Krishna Leela, that you become negatively affected, then you know, not quite ready for the cure. But if you read these things and start to feel the cleansing process, feel yourself being purified of the unwanted desires, then you know you're ready for the cure. It takes some time. It's not meant for right away. In other words, it's not meant for as soon as you take up Krishna consciousness, here's the cure. No. It's meant for someone who has demonstrated over some time that they can be a faithful follower, a faithful hearer. Then they can take that medicine. I remember in Los Angeles, 76 or so. There were many devotees, as I discussed Sunday, who were specializing in that section of the Bhagavatam, Rasa Lila. And Prabhupada was very, very disturbed, very, very angry. He said, this would destroy our preaching. This is Sahajyaism. And the devotees try to defend themselves. But doesn't Shukadeva Goswami say that by hearing these leelas, the heart will be cleansed of all lust? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, that is true, but you're not ready for that medicine. Therefore, instead of becoming purified, you'll become putrefied. There's a time and place for everything. There's a time and place for all types of medicines. Just like I got some homeopathic medicine for cleansing the lymph system from Dr. Daniel. He told me to take one pill a day. I couldn't handle it. It just had such an effect on my system. It just turned me upside down from the inside. So I just told him, I called him, I said, I can't handle this. He said, okay, cut down to a half a pill every other day. So I had Rasyatra cut all the pills in half, and I'd take them every other day. So it's manageable. So just like with any medicine, you have to be able to handle it. Otherwise, there's negative effects. Similarly, with Shukadeva Goswami's cure, you have to be able to handle it. It is the cure, but you have to qualify yourself to take the medicine. Just see how merciful Lord Krishna is. He knows the conditioned souls are so attached to their lusty affairs. Therefore, he comes and manifests his Rasa Leela. In other words, Krishna is saying, you like this kind of stuff? I'll show it to you in a perfect, pure way. You'll become attracted and you'll give up your physiological, biological madness. This is Krishna's mercy on us. You may question, why the Rasa Leela? Why is Krishna doing like this? He's doing like that to attract your attention to purity, to the spiritual world, the spiritual bodies and spiritual desires. Also, Krishna is fulfilling the desires of his dearest devotees to serve him in a certain way. Krishna's confidential consorts, they have no desire for their own happiness. They're dancing with Krishna to satisfy Krishna. Now, it takes knowledge to see that. Training. You have to be Shradhanvita. You have to be trained by the process of bhakti under guidance. Then you can understand the gopis are not dancing with Krishna for their own pleasure. They're dancing with Krishna simply and only for Krishna's pleasure. That's it. When you see that, when you understand that mystery, then you know I'm able to start to become purified by hearing about Rasa Leela. You can read that section of the Krishna book. You can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And you'll feel your heart becoming stirred up and the impurities starting to rise out of it. Then you know you're ready for the cure. Now the problem is the Mayavad contamination. Therefore, there's that warning by Shukadeva Goswami that you shouldn't even imitate the Rasa Leela in your mind. Now, consciously or unconsciously, the Mayavad contamination pushes you to think, Krishna's doing this, I can do it too. It's unconscious a lot of times. But you have to catch that in yourself. Oh, Krishna's doing it. Oh, I'd like to do this too. Unconsciously, perhaps, you're thinking, I am as good as Krishna. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. What's good for Krishna is good enough for me too. That's the meaning of conditioned life. What Krishna does, I'm going to do. So therefore, the Lord manifests this material world as a place where you can execute your perverted desires and get the result. And after being baffled birth after birth, you may look for a solution. So, try to catch that in yourself. How our materialistic life is simply an imitation of Krishna. And then there may be this unconscious Mayavad contamination that Krishna's doing it, so I'm going to be doing it. You might even feel yourself when you're reading Rasa Leela, putting yourself in the place of Krishna. Ooh, yeah. Then you understand the extent of the contamination. Krishna's enjoying, I'm going to enjoy. Once we become purified enough by the solid execution of bhakti yoga, we'll be able to take that cure. So yes, there is a cure, and it's a most amazing ultimate cure. Hearing about Krishna's Rasa Leela cleanses the heart of lust. Amazing. What appears to be Krishna's lusty activities cleanses our heart of material lust. Of course, there's no material lust about anything Krishna does. Krishna doesn't have a material body. How old was Krishna anyway when he executed Rasa Leela? 8 years old. He's just doing that to show you. How can this be anything material? I'm only 8 years old. You want to look at me from a material point of view? Of course, that example is getting a little hard to say now, because these days, 8-year-olds, they just imitate what they see on TV, what they see their parents do. Not what they see their parents do most of the time. Half the time, their parents aren't together. So what they see their mother and her latest boyfriend do, the 8-year-olds are imitating. So, it's getting hard to bring this point up because society is becoming so degraded. But previously, we could say, since when does an 8-year-old boy have lusty affairs? And everyone would agree, yes, yes. Now, they may not agree. What do you mean? It's happening all the time. It's a problem, you know? It's the ultimate goal of life. Start as soon as possible. Anyway, the real understanding is that Krishna has no material body. The gopis have no material bodies. If you want to see the gopis as having material bodies, then understand those material bodies of the gopis were asleep in their house with their husband. They went out to the forest to meet Krishna with their spiritual bodies. So their husbands weren't missing anything that they thought belonged to them. The husbands can claim the material body. The spirit soul is with Krishna. There are so many ways you can understand that the Rasa Leela is not a material event. So, I just wanted to make you aware of the ultimate lust solution, which is given by Shukadeva Goswami in Bhagavatam. But please remember this point from the Python Man. In this human form of life, a man and woman unite for the sensual pleasure of sex. You can just see it all happening. Yes, there'll be this, there'll be that. We'll do this, we'll do that. We'll spend our days in this way. Spend our nights in this way. Everything will be centered around that in our own private cave. We'll enrich in each other's lives in this way. That's the expectation. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. All right. Any questions?